Hello, everyone, and welcome back. It's Richard Lannan for Set for Success, where we help you create a roadmap to transform your business, career, or life. Having access to things and places is something that we all take for granted. It's like having a driver's license or running clean water or power when you switch on and off a light switch. I guess in Western society, it's almost like a quality of life thing. You know, a quality is something that is very personal and very individual. It is like a requirement that is non-functional but impacts the functions of many. Could be as simple as to have a need to have access to services, transportation, food, restaurants, how about restrooms, how about a desk, and many other possibilities. I do think that we forget that not everyone has easy access to the things that they need to create a better quality of life for themselves. Granting access to a person or a group of people is something that we're all responsible for providing in our businesses through removing barriers. I was reading an interesting Manitoba fact the other day that said 1 in 6 Manitobans are disabled by barriers. Now, 1 in 6 would be 17% of the population, and assuming a population 1.3 million, did a Google search, that would be 221,000 people are disabled by barriers in our businesses, communities, and homes. For a province with such a small population, that's a staggering amount of people, if you think about it. Now, just imagine for a minute, having access and barriers, people get injured. If temporarily, then they heal and they move on with their lives. But during that healing process or rehabilitation phase, recovery, you need access. Other people end up with permanent injuries with very specific requirements and solutions. While other people are born with disabilities and they need to have access, and others, we age and as we get older, we end up having future disabilities and future barriers to our lives. We all have one common thing. And I think this might be the common theme, is that we all are people who need access and barriers taken down. I think about people who need access because I see it in various forms, right? I'm just like anybody else in business or in your career, your life, your family. I mean, you see various things that go on. And so I'm always asking the question, you know, what about access to the things that we need to take, that we take for granted? What is the responsibility by law do businesses and organizations have to provide access to the 17% of the population that find themselves limited by barriers? And I think that's our topic for today with my guest, Marnie Courage, Director of Enabling Access. Marnie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Richard. Thanks for having me.
I always enjoy having you on the show. This is your second time hanging out with me, isn't it?
That's right.
So as a reminder, let's start off with Marnie the person. Okay, so tell us a little bit about yourself so that we just sort of get things going here.
Yeah, thanks. So born and raised in Winnipeg, I've seen a lot of the same things that you were talking about before in terms of how our community works together to make our environments more inclusive, to make our services more inclusive. 12 years ago, I started my company, Enabling Access, for that reason. At the time, it was because I saw a gap in services between what the public services were offering and what individuals needed in the community. So it started with group home agencies needing to move their residents from home to home because there was structural barriers. If there was a change in function for an individual or they had a medical issue come up, their home may no longer be appropriate for them.
Yeah, and I guess that can happen to us in many ways, shapes, or forms. I mean, one of the things in the intro, before we dive deep into this topic mm-hmm. and everything, and maybe we can talk a little bit about enabling access a little bit, it sounds to me like you provide a lot of service along the lines where people might have temporary injuries and or permanent injuries. Would that be appropriate to say?
That's right. So we have three streams of services. Yeah. One is the rehabilitation stream, which you touched on there. And really, that's for anybody who's had an injury or lives with a disability. Often they're being carried by an insurance company. And we help them rehab back to the job of living, whatever that might be. And so sometimes it's home modifications. Sometimes it's about getting the right mobility equipment. And sometimes it's just connecting them with other appropriate services. So that piece of our focus is really the foundation of who we are. The second piece, we look at helping employers in the community with injury prevention. And so this ties in with accessibility and rehab. It's the beginning of the spectrum. What can we do with employers to help them really start looking at what are the risk factors in their environments and the way those jobs are designed? So we provide ergonomic assessments and customized training for employers.
Okay.
And then that finally, the topic of the day is this accessibility. That's been a passion of mine for a very long time, and why I created my company in the first place, grown from just me to 10 employees now.
Yeah, you actually have become quite the substantial organization in this particular space. When we talk about accessibility and I guess barriers, let's go there, because I was playing around with the word barriers a little bit. I know that we can go deeper into that. But what kind of barriers do people experience in their lives?
Yeah, I guess when you think of a barrier, I know most people go right away to things like door openers and ramps and the physical environment. But that's just one barrier. There's actually quite a few. And you think about attitudinal barriers. What stereotypes do we possess and maybe not knowingly, you know, have biases about? And what do we think people, when you picture somebody with a disability, what's that image you have in your head? Is it somebody in a wheelchair or is it somebody who has a visual impairment? And so thinking about how we think about disabilities needs to evolve and really needs to, you need to think about more people, because we're all just one degree away from having, you know, a disability ourselves, and especially if we're aging, which we all are.
Yeah, we all are, right? I mean, I think it's like anything, you know, youth is wasted on the young.
Yeah, right.
And as you age, you start to realize a bit more. And injuries can happen to anybody.
That's right.
As you mentioned, and I didn't say anything on this, but I know my guests know this, and I'm very physically active. And being a physical active person, you get injuries and you discover barriers,
right?
You know, even if it's just temporary, you still discover it and you got to figure out work throughs and things.
Right. And so when you think of somebody who has a lifelong disability, they're confronted by barriers every day. For those of us who have temporary disabilities, maybe you break a toe. I did last summer.
Sure.
Right away, you figure out fast what you're not able to do. But more importantly, what the environment doesn't allow you to do or services don't allow you to do. So that's why when you had said that there's barriers that prevent people from being as independent as they can be. Absolutely. We all have really that obligation to look at the barriers we're presenting. So other ones include sort of technology barriers, thinking about your website. It's not just about, you know, is the font big enough, right? But, you know, how is the information displayed? And if somebody did have a visual impairment and your website's full of pictures, if you don't have an alt tag, which is something that describes what the picture is about, somebody with a visual impairment doesn't see any of that information. And so it's really rethinking how you communicate with the public. And that leads us to policies in terms of your company policies.
Okay.
An example might be no pets. You know, no, you're not allowed to bring pets to work. There's no dogs allowed in here. And what if somebody needs a service animal to help them?
To actually be able to help them go to work every day,
right,
or be at work.
Right.
You know what we're going to do? I think we're going to take a short break. When we come back, I think we should maybe take those common barriers and dig into them and then sort of talk a little bit about what's being done about overcoming barriers. This is Richard Lanford, Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Marnie Courage. Enabling Access is the name of the company, Marnie. Just before the break, and actually during the break, we were having a little side conversation on barriers. And it's come to light that there's really five common barriers that we can talk about. And I know you mentioned a few in the first segment, but I'd like to break them down a little bit. And I wrote a couple of quick notes down here for our listeners. Architectural and structural barriers. So let's go back to those sort of, let's just walk through them a little bit. What's an architectural and structural barrier?
Well, really, those are the things that we encounter and are quite obvious to us, especially if you have a mobility disability. So when you go into any building, the first thing you need to do is park.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, fair enough. And parking sometimes is really difficult.
Right.
Yeah.
And so really looking at, is there accessible parking? What is accessible parking? It's one thing to have accessible parking, but then you don't have a barrier-free path to your front door. What we see in the community is there's a lot of good intentions with parking and drop-off. However, if they don't connect to each other, you're lost.
Yeah,
in terms of that barrier is still there. So we start in a parking lot, and can you park? And is there a drop-off zone? So somebody who maybe has a van, an accessible van, who needs to be right in front of the drop-off, is there a zone, a safe zone to do that? And is there a curb cut out there that they're able to safely get onto a public sidewalk?
Okay, so those are things that are taken in consideration. So I think that's a great example of architectural and structural, because who, if you drive or you have somebody drive you, everybody's had access issues at some point in time. And then you add in the barriers in there, and then you add in a disability, and then it just becomes very complicated.
Right.
Fair enough.
Right. And the approach is more obvious, I think, to everybody else. It's how you get in a building.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if there's not a door opener or an activator there, people have a lot of difficulty getting in. And it's really about that design of where it's placed. And would the door be in the way for somebody, let's say, using a mobility device, if your button or your activator is in the wrong spot?
Yeah. And you can't get to it.
No. And you might create a new barrier. So sort of understanding the why behind this, not just a check list of this is what you need to do. It's
to
understanding
in place.
What's the intention here.
It's interesting to say that this is what you need to do, because I've been involved in many conversations, strategic planning and tactical planning levels within organizations, mm-hmm. and we talk about disabilities. You know, mm-hmm. what do we do with people? Mm-hmm. But let me rephrase that. What we do for people with disabilities. It just didn't sound right. And you know, you're making me think that do we actually have conversations about barriers? I'm not too sure if we do. You know, I think we take certain things maybe for granted, mm-hmm. like the sink should be lower mm-hmm. or something, without really sometimes diving deeper into it.
Ties into the attitudinal barriers, too.
Yeah.
Of what are our assumptions that we walk around with? Some people have assumptions for what people need.
Yeah.
And so I've, you know, experienced people saying, well, we've put in a door opener and we've done, you know, we've tried to make gains in some of these areas, but our intentions didn't, you know, they didn't work for the people that we designed it for. And really what we should be doing is designing for all or the majority of the people. So thinking about a door opener, it doesn't just help somebody in a wheelchair. It helps somebody who's carrying a box.
Yeah, yeah.
A hands-free option coming in through the front door.
Sure, sure. How many times have you struggled to get through a door with a box in your hand that's probably too heavy for you to be carrying in the first place?
Right. Or a stroller.
Or a stroller. Yeah. Okay, well, fair enough. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Beforehand, I was talking about the 17%, and I picked that up on one of the government of Manitoba's websites. But now as I think about it, I mean, 17% of a company with 1,000 people, that means, you know, if you have 1,000 people in your company, that means 17% of your company are with disabilities. That's quite significant.
Right. And so we're talking about the public, we're talking about employees, we're talking about all Manitobans who would really benefit from improved access. We've been focusing on that physical environment, but it's really important for people to understand that although that is a, you know, those are common barriers that we see, these other barriers can also, you know, interfere with businesses being able to get their goods and services out to the public, to 17% of the population who really would use them if they were accessible.
They were accessible. Yeah. That's the other side. That's the other side of the coin for an organization. So I guess what you could say is truly understanding who your customers are and who are going to use your services from that perspective.
Right.
What about one of the other things on your list was information and communication. Mm-hmm. So what do you mean by information and communications being a barrier?
Well, thinking about how you get your company information out to the public and to your own employees. So thinking about signage. You know, are your signs in places where people can actually see them, at heights that we can see them? You think about an airport. An airport, they usually put a lot of time and energy into their signage, because when you're running through an airport or you're rolling through an airport and you need to get to that gate, you need clear information in a place that you can see it quickly. Mm-hmm. We need to think about our businesses that way too, and know that there's not just one good way to project information, that we really got to talk about alternate formats of information. So we think about brochures or we think about websites. Well, let's start talking about how else we can deliver that information to our employees and to our public in terms of alternate formats. Maybe there is Braille menus at a restaurant, right?
Okay.
To have something like that, or to have communication offered in audio.
Yeah.
Instead of visual information.
It's interesting you would use that one as an example, because I was just working with a group of people where we were creating what are called use cases, and we were creating for ATM machines, and we were using make a deposit as an example. And there's requirements to be able to do that. But when we got the special requirements, then we started having that whole conversation about, well, do you have different languages? If your ATM machine only has one language, then now you created a barrier to a group of people. But one of the ones that came up was Braille. Right? On the keypads and everything.
Right.
Something you may not take into consideration, but obviously helping people with visual impairment. Mm-hmm. So I think we're sort of that's another example of dealing with information and communication just by thinking about, you know, who's going to use the service. Sounds like I'm preaching. Right. I don't have a question. I just want to use an example here and then go from there.
And or think about a washroom. And when I talk about alternate formats, think about signage for a barrier-free bathroom. Now you'll have a universal symbol for accessibility, but there will also be Braille there as well. So there's a tactile component to the sign. There's a visual component to the sign. And that way you're offering the information in different ways. Or the audio cue that you should hear in an elevator when it goes through the floors. And so people who have visual deficits and can't see the keypads will have to count out those tones to know what floor they're on.
To know what floor they're on.
Right.
We got to take a short break. I think when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the other barriers. And then I think we'll talk a little bit about some of the standards and the law around the barriers. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. I'm hanging out with Marnie Courage, Enabling Access, and we're talking a little bit about access and barriers. So just before the break, we had broken down three or four of the barriers. And I know there's one more on my list, the systematic barriers. And I wanted to know what systematic barriers are.
Right. These are kind of invisible barriers in a workplace or in a community where policies may create barriers. So when you start looking at your policies and your HR folks get together and say, well, there's a reason we have this policy in place, really look at, does the policy create an inclusive environment, or does it alienate or segment, or does it create barriers for some of the population? And so examples of that. Yeah. Are things like a no pet policy in a workplace where some people require a service animal to be productive and independent in their environment. And so if you have a no pet policy, all of a sudden you're creating a barrier for anybody who does require a service animal. Another example might be if you have a policy on payment for admission somewhere. And if somebody needs, say you have a cognitive disability, a developmental disability, and you need an attendant with you for your own safety or to navigate the environment, to have a policy that requires attendants to pay as well as the individual really does create barriers.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
If you think about a person being... somebody, a support individual, is really an assistive device to that individual. It's like you or I carrying around a cell phone with our agenda on it. People with disabilities and cognitive disabilities, intellectual disabilities, may need another person with them. And so really that's an assistive device, and it's a human right to have that assistive device.
That makes it quite interesting because, you know, when you mention that particular example, that is one I would not have thought of.
Mm-hmm.
But with aging parents... this case, I'm going to straight out talk about my dad, who's 95. I'm not always available, actually, to take him anywhere. And there's a geographic issue and everything. But I do use an assistant to do that. So in essence, I've never thought of him as an assisted device. Is that what you...
Right.
That's,
yeah.
And is that the appropriate language?
Well, an assisted device is really anything that helps somebody be independent.
Yeah.
So we talk about, speech devices helping people talk who don't have speech, or a hearing aid is an
assistive device. Yeah.
My glasses are an assistive
device. Yeah, you don't really think about that.
Right.
And glasses being an everyday thing that we all... use.
Right. And so with glasses, you know, you may, I don't consider myself disabled because I have something that's helping me do the job of seeing for me. So just like having an attendant, having a service animal, having support personnel or a service animal or any kind of assistive device is just part of the package in terms of doing your job of living, whatever it is that you need to do.
Yeah, and it sounds to me like there's, like, we've gone through five different categories of barriers when it comes to having access. I know, having spoken with you separately and also doing a little bit of reading, there's something called the Accessibility of Manitoba Act, which I'd love you to tell us what that is.
Right. Yeah. So it's a really exciting time in Manitoba to talk about accessibility because there's a lot of momentum. The Accessibility for Manitobans Act, otherwise known as AMA, is legislation that was landmark legislation that actually came into place in 2013. And at that point, really, the intention was to sort of follow in Ontario's footsteps, a province who's made some really good headway in terms of accessibility laws. And so the Accessibility for Manitobans Act was creative, and it was really thinking about a proactive process for reducing those barriers we talked about and taking down barriers and preventing barriers from being created. And so the intent of all of that is, you know, to have a more inclusive Manitoba with the goal of 2023. So we've got some time to work on this. And really, the law came with it 5 standards. And the first of those standards is the customer service standard.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about some of the standards then and see how far we can get. Mm-hmm. So what is the customer service standard?
So the customer service standard really reflects a lot of the things we were just talking about in terms of reducing those barriers, architectural, communication, technology, and your policies, looking at your systemic barriers, and reducing those barriers. So it's about a conversation in the workplace about what we can do to reduce those barriers. And really what people need to know about this is it really pertains to every organization or person who runs a business. And you just have to have one or more employees, and this standard applies to you.
Okay. And is this a standard that a lot of companies are aware of, or do you think they're sort of unaware of?
There's some emerging knowledge about this.
Emerging knowledge. I love that. I love that statement. So explain.
Yeah. So with this standard, it really is talking about the obligation of employers to identify barriers, remove barriers, prevent the creation of barriers, and to provide equivocal services. And so everybody has a different definition of what equal service is. But, you know, with everything that's happening south of the border in terms of human rights and inclusion, we are at, you know, there's small things that we can each do here in our own community to improve the inclusivity of it and to make sure that we are supporting each other and really to align with the Human Rights Act. So in doing that with the customer service, there's many things that employers can do. And it starts with a conversation. It starts with asking, how can I help?
Yeah, yeah. And do you think what aspect of an organization is responsible for actually having that conversation? Like, where do you think it sort of all stems from?
Well, I think it's everybody's obligation, absolutely. And so any decision maker within an organization, certainly human resources needs to be involved. What we're recommending is that organizations form accessibility committees, get this on the agenda, and start talking about what is accessible about your company and potentially what barriers exist. And you can use those 5 barrier areas to start the discussion of where barriers exist. And so this standard is really making organizations accountable for the barriers that they do have. So it's about identifying those barriers. It doesn't mean fixing everything and making everything perfect.
Yeah, because that's a virtual impossibility. I mean, you'd be trying to take everything into consideration.
Right.
Just sort of maybe a repeat on the barriers. I know we talked about architectural or structural, information, communication, technology, systematic barriers, and attitude being a significant barrier to overcome. I can't help but think that this requires collaboration on a variety of different levels. What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. That is what it's about. It's creating communities within your own workplace. So involving the disability community is paramount.
Yeah.
So, you know, getting in tune with the experts who actually live these barriers from day to day is so important here. So involving the disability community, really examining your policies, examining your environment, looking at what sort of administrative obstacles are presented. Think about things like where your garbage can is placed in a bathroom. If it's placed right under the hand dryer, are you creating a barrier to people getting close to that? So it's really sort of these small steps that organizations can take and start looking at, you know, whose responsibility is it? Well, facilities for cleaning up and pushing chairs into the boardroom tables at the end of a day so people can get around. It's HR, you know, making sure that you're hiring with diversity in mind and creating policies that are inclusive in nature. It's management to communicate to their own staff and to the public that they are considering considering accessibility, and they are moving towards a more accessible organization. And this is the goal, that we're all trying to work together with the common goal of inclusivity.
Yeah. And I think that's when we start talking about a percentage of 17% of a population being impacted with requirements for access and barriers. To me, that becomes a fairly significant number, and inclusiveness becomes an extremely important part. This is Richard Lanford, Set for Success. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Marnie Courage. We've been talking a bit about accessibility and barriers in the last segment, Accessibility for Manitoba's Act and Customer Service Standards. Some really interesting stuff, Marnie, around barriers, because you're making me think about things that I haven't thought about for a while, or if anything, only temporarily, because I use the example of just temporary physical injuries and what your requirements are. I can imagine there must be a lot going on in the community in terms of collaborative community efforts. Can maybe you just speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, this is the wonderful piece about all of this and why I'm so passionate about accessibility in our province, because we've got grassroots organizations like Barrier Free Manitoba pushing along this legislation, asking for the details of this law to really be inclusive and getting the government to define that. So Barrier Free Manitoba, working with the Accessibility Advisory Committee, really working hard, asking other disability groups within the community what they need out of this law, has been really, really inspiring. And during Access Awareness Week in June, there was a lot of great presentations going on around the city about this topic and what we could all do. So I really think that companies can take sort of small steps. But like you said, once we've opened up our ears and our eyes and our hands to what these barriers are, you can't undo that. And that's fantastic. That's contagious.
Yeah, it is. I would say that is definitely contagious. And if you have an organization, said Barrier Free Manitoba,
that's right,
that's out there doing that, I suspect they're trying to represent, and you can address this, represent a lot of different stakeholders in this whole issue.
Absolutely. And it's about a variety of population. And it's not just about people with disabilities. It's about Indigenous people. It's about everybody else who has had barriers presented to them. And it's really, having a lens now, a wider lens about how we conduct our business, how we shop, how we do those things. And to see that our actions and the way we design our environment can have an effect on people, both positively and negatively. And this is where, as an inclusive design specialist, I really look at designing for the masses, designing for the most people that you can. And then these barriers aren't presented architecturally or structurally. And then looking at services. So we really try and help organizations go down this road and get started. So in doing that, we've started collaborating with an organization, Manitoba League of People with Disabilities, and together with them, who have a committee of members within the community who are disabled and have such awesome and valuable experiences to share with us and listen to help us solve these problems in our community. We've also partnered with a local architectural firm, F Block Architecture, and together our three agencies are now providing joint accessibility services in the way of auditing and screening for customer service, and helping companies sort of move along and navigate down this path that can seem really intimidating if you're not in the business of accessibility.
And I think we've already established that we can easily have bias in terms of how we define accessibility or barriers, or what that looks like and what the solution should be. So having a third party come in and play in terms of helping us through that would be a positive.
Right. And what I'm finding is I'm an occupational therapist by background. So my focus is really people, function, and that interaction with the environment. And it lends itself so well to be working closely with a disability agency who is really an advocacy organization, which is Manitoba League, or called MLPD. And then this local architecture firm, F Block, who's really motivated and interested in accessibility. So together, we've got got three different lenses to help organizations move forward with this, and perspective that is respective of building code, respective of national standards in terms of barrier-free design, and then also looking at policy and analysis and how things are set up, and helping people with accessibility events. So making sure events that you put on, are you getting people out to them? Or are you not reaching some of your population?
Are you limiting some of your right. population in those right. events? I can't help but when every time I hear the word disability, ask you for a definition of disability. Is that okay? Can you provide me one off cuff?
Yeah, well, really, and everybody has their own sort of interpretation of that, but it's really the idea that somebody is not able to do what they want to do because of a barrier. So if when you ask somebody who has maybe a mobility impairment, it's about the impairments. Whether they have a disability or not depends on often things in the environment and people and other things that would create a disability. But somebody can have an impairment. I have a visual impairment, but yeah, I wear glasses, so I'm not disabled.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's why I was just trying to see if I could break the word down a little mm-hmm. bit, because I hate to think that because of attitude mm-hmm. or past thinking that we take a word like that and we assign a negative connotation to it.
Right.
And it really, the word disability applies to everybody, mm-hmm. right? In a more holistic way. Either it impacts us either by, we used glasses as the example, mm-hmm. Or we know somebody, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was sort of, maybe I was reaching a little bit.
Well, I think that if you ask, it's an individual perspective. If
sure.
you ask somebody who has any kind of impairment, they may or may not say that they have a disability, depending on how they feel about it.
And, sure.
You
okay.
know?
Fair enough.
And so I think that's a great question for businesses to start asking. And one of the ways to find out about attitude in a business is to do a survey. And, you know, this is a free way to find out what people think. How do people define a disability? What does accessibility mean to you?
Right. And that's actually quite interesting to say that, because I'm a big time into solution requirements. Right. And so accessibility to one person defined and accessibility to another person is not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so define those are important. Are there resources that businesses can go to?
Absolutely. Right now, the government has an administrative arm or department called the Disabilities Issues Office. And they are fantastic because they are looking at putting together resources for businesses to help them navigate with training, with all sort of the background about the law. And there's a website, accessibilitymb.ca, that you can go to find out more about the AMA or the Accessibility for Manitobans Act. And certainly Barrier-Free Manitoba, if you just want to get your finger on the pulse about what's happening in Manitoba regarding accessibility, great resource and lots of good information to share. And we got to start talking to each other instead of reinventing the wheel. So forming groups with other like organizations to say, hey, what are you doing for accessibility? What works for you and what hasn't worked?
Yeah, so there are some options, resources. Yeah. If somebody wanted to use you as a resource, in other words, mm-hmm. to contact you, how would they go about doing that?
Yeah, they can just go to our website, which is enablingaccess.ca, and head over to one of our service focus, which is inclusive design and accessibility. And we can certainly set you in the right direction with our accessibility services for consulting, or send you off to somebody in the community who could better address your specific
bigger
needs.
Issue. Yeah, so you can become a resource yourselves
right.
to organizations or individuals or families, et cetera, if needing it.
Right.
Great show, Marnie. I've always enjoyed having conversations with you. You're so much fun.
And well,
always full of information, too. I always learn so much. And sometimes I ask, hopefully, good questions. Sometimes I think I ask the wrong question, but then I end up learning what I should be asking. So thank you. If you had a final thought for our listeners, what would it be?
Well, I think it's just to start asking questions, have a discussion about what accessibility is, and think about your next experience in a bank, in a grocery store, or
a restaurant,
and think, you know, haven't been presented by barriers here, but I wonder,
if somebody else.
What about this bathroom, or what about this menu? And start taking a stand and asking for it and, you know, leaving that restaurant saying, I just noticed that, you know, if I was blind or if I had a visual impairment, I might not be able to see this menu.
Yeah,
Have you considered that? Things like that. So we all need to start asking for it is the first step.
Yeah. Marnie, thank you very much. I really love having you on the show. To our listeners, thank you for tuning in. Of course, if you have a thought, a question, just email me at richard@setforsuccess.ca. And do remember to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.